The last case on the court's oral calendar this morning is Staples Motley School District and Paul David Anderson versus Dave Johnson. Respondents did not file briefs in this matter, so we'll hear this morning only from counsel for appellant Mr. Johnson. Are you ready to proceed?
Yes.
Okay. Please approach the podium. State your name for the record. Take a moment to adjust the podium if it is not the proper height for you, and then begin your argument.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Samuel Edmonds. I represent the petitioner in each of these appeals, David Johnson. I will note first that we filed our brief. Since then, there's been no further filings in the case. The respondents, there are two consolidated cases here. The respondents in both cases did not file a brief. Are pro se, as far as I know. So I will not spend time rehashing what I set out in the brief. We are asking the court to reverse the decision of the district court to issue the harassment restraining orders in each of these cases. As the court reviews the factual record, the court will see that neither party seeking a restraining order met the burden of proof that would be required. As the court knows, in order to issue a harassment restraining order, the district court must find that harassment actually occurred. And first, with the school district case, there was no evidence presented, no witnesses testified, no exhibits were offered. Even if the court relied only on the petition itself, the petition did not establish facts that would justify a restraining order. The second case involving Paul Anderson, there was testimony taken from Mr. Anderson. I was just reviewing it again this morning, and as the court reviews the entirety of that testimony, I would ask the court to find that there was not sufficient evidence to support a restraining order. As the court knows, there must be repeated incidents. Let me get the quote. Repeated incidents of intrusive or unwanted acts, words, or gestures that have a substantial adverse effect or are intended to have a substantial adverse effect on the safety, security, or privacy of another. The testimony of Mr. Anderson taken as a whole did not prove that my client, Mr. Johnson, engaged first in any repeated incidents. At most, there was one incident alleged, but even that incident was not proven in any way.
I was just going to inquire that. Mr. Edmonds, the court did make a finding, it looks like in August, of a threat, and the record seems to suggest would support that. Is the point made there was not repeated threats, hence not sufficient basis for that incident?
Thank you for the question, Your Honor. Two responses to that. First, that finding of fact by the district court was not supported by the record.
Because the record, he didn't testify, Mr. Johnson made a threat to me. That was the finding the district court made.
Correct.
Johnson made a threat to Mr. Anderson.
Correct.
And Mr. Anderson testified that I heard from an undisclosed third party that he made some comments about a hit list and I'm on it.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. So the district court, I would suggest, may have misconstrued the testimony. There was no testimony that Mr. Johnson made a threat directly to Mr. Anderson.
Or any testimony that Mr. Johnson repeatedly drove by Mr. Anderson's home?
Correct. So the second response to your question, Your Honor, just as the court said, even if we assumed for sake of argument that factual finding was supported by the record, still, that's one incident, and the statute requires repeated incidents before a restraining order can be issued.
You started out by mentioning there's been no filings, and I see both orders expired.
Correct.
Correct. Is it possible that the issue would be moot, therefore, to the court?
No. I was prepared to get that question. I assumed maybe that we were scheduled here for argument today because of that possibility of mootness.
Didn't I write an opinion saying it's not moot in an OFP context because it has lingering potential criminal consequences?
Yes, that's exactly right, Your Honor. I'm looking at Pechonovich versus Pechonovich, P-E-C-H-O-N. I'm sorry, P-E-C-H-O.
I picked the most difficult to pronounce case to announce that principle.
Correct. And just for the record, I'll make sure to spell it correctly, P-E-C-H-O-V-N-I-K, Court of Appeals 2009. There, this court held that an order for protection that had expired was not moot because of the potential for collateral consequences. The court said a party may rebut the presumption of collateral consequences only by showing there is no possibility that any collateral legal consequences will be imposed. That was quoting a McCaskill case. So the same is true here. Yes, the harassment restraining orders have expired, but they may continue to have collateral consequences for Mr. Johnson. First, just the fact that there was a finding of harassment and a prior restraining order comes with a certain stigma. You know, these are public court documents, and right now Mr. Johnson is living with the fact that there was at a time in the past a restraining order against him. But also more concretely, I'd point the court to the restraining order statute itself, 609.748. A prior restraining order can be used to make a future restraining order longer. So the statute says, in essence, that if a party gets a second or third restraining order against the same party, then it can be for up to 50 years. So that's a potential collateral consequence in the future, where if the same party has tried to get a restraining order against Mr. Johnson, they could use the existence of the prior order against him. Secondly, quickly, both the guardianship and conservatorship statutes in Minnesota have as a factor whether a restraining order had ever been issued against a person in the past. So,
disqualifying the person from serving as guardian or conservator?
Not necessarily disqualifying, no. But this
a factor that could be considered? Is that how it comes into play in that context?
Correct. I'm looking at Minnesota Statute 524.5-303. In subsection C of the statute, it says that a petition for guardianship must set forth the following information. And on the list there is whether an order for protection or harassment restraining order has ever been issued against the proposed guardian. So it doesn't seem to indicate that it would be a disqualifier, but it would be a factor considered.
And Mr. Edmonds, in going back to the HRO with respect to the school district, you touched on it, but I just want to clarify. So what you're talking about in terms of that one is that there wasn't any like sworn testimony, so you didn't have the full hearing with respect to that one to provide the information to support the HRO?
Yes.
Okay.
So that's essentially an argument that there is no evidence in that case on which a decision could be based because there wasn't sworn testimony or documents offered and received as exhibits?
Correct. That's one argument. I'd suggest our strongest argument is there was no evidence presented, no sworn testimony, no exhibits, therefore nothing for the court to justify issuing a restraining order.
But even if we look at the arguments that were made, do they even support the findings that the district court made in support of a harassment restraining order?
No. And the other issue that I didn't even get far into in my brief is, you know, the restraining order for the school district was issued in favor of all students that go to the schools, all employees at the schools. And certainly there was no evidence even suggested that Mr. Johnson had harassed all students or employees at the schools. So almost every single one of those protected parties from the restraining order it wasn't even suggested that they had been harassed by Mr. Johnson. But even bringing it to a simpler level, there just simply was no evidence presented. I had an appeal here a few years ago. It was a case, I believe, was called Moldy, M-O-L-D-E. And that one, that case ended up going by default. And I argued that since it was default, there was no hearing, no evidence taken, no testimony. So same arguments here, that there was nothing to justify issuing the restraining order. But there I lost that appeal because my client had defaulted herself, and so the court was justified in proceeding just based on the pleadings. So the court in that case could just simply look at the petition for the restraining order and find that, you know, yeah, at least alleged sufficient facts to justify a restraining order. Here we don't even have that. You know, even if the court looked at that, the petition for a restraining order, even the petition would not justify issuing a restraining order. And I'd suggest it'd be inappropriate for the district court to look at the allegations in the petition when it's not a default case. It's a contested case, and there, in a contested case, the court should set aside the petition and base its decision only on the evidence presented in the hearing. So with that, I will yield the remainder of my time unless there's any questions.
Thank you for your arguments.
Thank
matter
you.
Matter is submitted. You'll have our decision within the statutory time frame. That concludes the morning calendar for oral arguments. We'll proceed to our non-oral calendar. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.